Hey everybody, this is Mel and Brooke from Mom's Art 2. Okay, before we start the episode, stop listening right now and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
If you want to watch us make a fool of ourselves, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Mom's Art 2 and get video episodes each week.
All right, on to the show. It's time for our Industry Insider. What?
You know, more of like the television and film into music and all of that.
I wish I knew.
That's why we're here. Well, but that's, you know, you're a part of our Industry Insider episode.
Go.
So the whole point is to make sure that those that are either in the industry or looking to get into the industry just have some insight on how you yourself, because it's so unique for everybody, right? Everybody's right. Got a unique story of how they got to where they are in this industry.
And it's never a straight path. And I think that's one of the things that I think that's the thing is that you have a really cool story and career, an ongoing and building career. But one of the things that people, when they first move out here, is that they feel like I need to do this and then this and then this.
Right.
Yeah. And it's really hard when you get out here to feel like you're not taking the right path because it wasn't written in a book.
Right.
And I didn't go to college and then I got a job and I did interviews and then I get married and then I have kids. Like everything has to be in a straight line. So
yeah,
that's why we wanted to talk to you because you are an industry insider at an incredible level and we want to know your story. So
writer, director,
Producer, teacher,
Tony Estrada, everybody.
So welcome to Mom's Art 2. Thank you for doing this with us and going through our audio perfection.
Let's drink to that.
We're
having a drink. You have water.
Yeah, so are we.
Super water with vodka.
Totally water.
So we would love to start with who you are and what you do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you both. So as far as who I am, I'm Tony Estrada. I'm predominantly a producer writer. I've also, dabbled in talent management here and there. And honestly, I've been all over the place as far as my career goes, from directing, producing, writing, into music, into film and television, now going into theater a little bit here too. So, it's been kind of all over the place, but it's been super fun.
Yeah. So you started out, so tell us your origin story about how everything, the process got started for you, where you're from originally and how you moved through time and space. Yeah.
on a jetpack.
so it's a little bit of a long one. So brace yourselves, but I'll try to keep it as quick.
Totally
as
comfortable.
I
love your story, and I know I'm going to hear more things that I don't even know. So I'm excited.
So I went to the University of Michigan. When I was there,
come on, it's fine.
It's a good guys. When I went there, I didn't know what I wanted to study. My brother said, hey, you should study business because it's versatile and they have one of the biggest business programs or one of the best business programs in the world. So I said, great. So I went, I took a math class and I was like, oh, cool. This is not going to happen. I was always interested in the intelligence community. So then I thought about studying Arabic because the Iraqi war was going on at that time, as well as we were still in Afghanistan. So I took Arabic and I thought, well, this would be really useful. Again, took a semester of that. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen either. So my junior year rolled around and they're like, you need to declare something. You have to. So I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So that's I stumbled into a classical film theory class. And this is the type of class.
Oh, your parents must have been so proud.
Oh, they were so stoked. So I took a classical film theory class. I was like, this class is so obscenely boring. I don't understand it. This is so confusing. I don't want to watch any of these movies. But in the weirdest way, I also couldn't get enough of it. It was very strange. So actually rewind a little bit on the first day of class. In every film school class, the first thing that they ask you is, who you are and what's your favorite movie. So, you know, we're going around class and they're saying, you know, it's a junior year of film class. So all these kids are going around saying like these very artistic movies from like 30s France. And it's like,
dude, Fellini, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I mean, they're not, this was like so like off the edge. It wasn't even Fellini. This was like some very obscure film from like 30. Tokyo that like no one's seen, right?
Yeah, I'm so basic.
So they get around to me and I go, hi, my name's Tony. My favorite movies are Rocky IV and Ocean's 11. And everyone started laughing at me. And I dead seriously just go, I don't understand what's funny about that. Those are my favorite movies. And the room went silent. And my professor started busting up laughing. And he said, please come talk to me afterwards. So it was after that class where he said, you know, there's not many kids here that are willing to be honest about what it is they really like. And he goes, and it's so strange to me that this is a business as well as art. And he goes, I bet you like movies like Die Hard, don't you? I said, I love it, you know? And he's like, but that's the thing. It's like these kids all look at commercial films as bad, but you come and say things that you really like and that you're honest about. Mm-hmm. He goes, and that's something that's super, super important. So if you ever have any questions about what, you know, this is all about, just let me know and I'm happy to answer them. That was the first thing that sort of gave me like the bug.
Yeah.
And then the next semester I took the intro to film class and then I was like, oh man, this is what this is about. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I did it in reverse, but I'm really glad that I did it that way because that intro to film class brought it to a whole new level. And it was like sitting with my professor for, you know, I would go in with a clip from Saving Private Ryan and I would go, I know this is good, but I don't understand why. And we would sit there talking about it for like 3 hours. And I was like, man, this is amazing. And I just want more and more and more of this.
Yeah.
And then I would go into a screenwriting class and my screenwriting professor was notorious for not liking anybody, but he took a liking to me because he was like, you just want to get better at this. He goes, you don't know what you're doing half the time, but you're just so excited and you're so like energized. And he goes, and you're also just willing to take feedback and critical feedback really well. So like, you know, count me as your sort of ally here. So again, I would go after class and I would talk to him and like try to work these things out with him. And so cut to graduating college, don't know what I'm going to do. I was like, I need to get in the film industry, but I don't know how. And, you know, I'm from West Covina, which is 30, 45 minutes from.
I was about to say, you're a SoCal native. Right?
Yeah.
And I went all the way to Michigan to study film, which still doesn't make sense.
Funny?
To me.
Oh my God.
And then I was looking for a job and my brother was teaching at the high school that we both attended. And, just as the summer was coming to an end, he decided to go back to his old job. And he said to the principal, hey, sorry, I'm going to like leave, but I think my brother should take over the film class here because he's just so much better at this. And this is what he studied. So yeah, I started the film program there and I started like, so I started teaching and I was teaching film photography and English, sophomore English literature, at an all boys Catholic school, which is a wild experience. To say the least,
other episode.
It really is a whole other episode.
Yeah, not to mention that you went there, but you also taught there.
And it's funny too because it's like, you know, I'm this 22-year-old kid. These other kids are like maybe 4 years younger than me.
Yeah,
and I'm a teacher teaching them film, and you know, but it was something I really, really enjoyed. About halfway into the year, I just so happened to be on Facebook one day and a buddy of mine who I loosely knew at the time, I'd met like maybe once or twice. He was a year ahead of me. He posted on Facebook that he was working at MGM. So I was like, let me just see if this guy remembers me. So I reach out to him and I was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm trying to get my foot in the industry, blah, blah, blah. He goes, oh my God, are you kidding me? I love you, man. Like, yes. Like, let's meet up. Let's talk, all this stuff. So then he ends up putting me up for an internship. And part of this internship was you had to be in college. I was like, well, I just graduated. So I signed up for community college, never attended a class, but got the credit because they didn't want to pay interns. So every Friday I would go down to MGM and work. And I just was like obsessed with being there. I loved reading the scripts. I loved just being in the room. I loved the energy of it. I loved walking.
What department were you? Were you in development or where? Yeah. What were you?
Yeah, I was in the creative development department.
I want to stop you right here because there's a few things that I need to cover that you are talking about that are incredible. One is the fact that you were in college, and one of the things that the professor loved about you was that you could take criticism, constructive criticism, right? Like you were never afraid to hear the negative things or things you could better or whatever. So you were never so attached to your own thoughts and work that you didn't want to evolve, which I think in this industry is so important. You still have to know who you are and what you like you did, like Die Hard and, you know, all those movies. But I almost said Airplane.
That's a good one too. Look,
that's a great movie.
A classic film noir.
Don't call me Shirley.
Oh my God, the best. I wanted to actually have the kids watch it. And I was like, is there any?
I know. Yeah, you forget.
But that, and then after you were out of that situation, already having that ability to take criticism and hear things, and even if it isn't something that you necessarily believe about yourself, you take it and learn from it and see other people's perspectives. But then you get to LA and you reach out to someone that you knew a long time ago and you took the step to make that happen. And that sometimes I think in this industry is the hardest thing, because we all know people in the industry and we're like, I don't want to like bother them. And
you don't want to come across as like
needy.
Or you want to use
You went at them in a completely honest way. I am just back out here. I really want to be in the industry. I would love to pick your brain. Whatever it was that you said, you took that first step. And whether it went anywhere or not, the fact that you have that in you to take that first step is huge.
Thank you so much.
We all need to be reminded of that, because we all get that fear of like, well, nobody really wants to listen to me, or nobody really wants to.
Absolutely.
Or for those that are getting into the industry and they feel like they have something to prove. Mm-hmm. And sometimes coming in, like I've been in those script writing classes where you know that those people have like their diehards and, you know, feel like they're going to teach you something.
And you know, and it's like $13
to see here together.
Well, and I want to say too that like, yes, that you know, thank you for all those generous things you said, but I also think back to two things that two separate professors said to me. One was a screenwriting professor, and he said, "You know what? You may not be great at this yet, but," he goes, "God, reading your pages are so much fun, because I can tell how much fun you're having."
See?
And then the number
two,
the other thing was like some of those kids that were very like artsy and like very closed off to me, we would shoot things. And like one time we were shooting this one thing in one of the, like some of the woods near Michigan, and there's a hill, and this kid was trying to recreate a childhood memory. So he wanted to recreate sledding, and it was snowing. So I go, give me the camera and push me downhill. So I went down in a sled with the camera and spin around off this hill, right? And so the kid, when he's showing the class, he goes, you know, the teacher's like, is there anything that you want to say about this? Yeah, you know, the kid's like, oh, this is like a childhood memory. He goes, oh, and one other thing, I don't think anyone else can have as much fun making movies as Tony does.
That's incredible. And
it's really, really stuck with me, because the teacher not only agreed with it, but she goes, yeah, was that like a secret to the entire class, right? And I go, man, that's crazy that my passion for this, my love for this, is that like resonant with people. You know, I don't think I realized that until a few years later, but it was like that sort of just drive and desire to want to be there and to just like do it is what I guess, you know, gravitate people towards me.
Hey, everybody. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about this new thing that we found is called Moonlight. It's amazing. We're still reading to our kids at night, and I can be honest with you, sometimes it's tedious because we're reading the same book over and over and over and over. Well, let me tell you, Moonlight is incredible. The magic of Moonlight is simple. It's the experience of reading together with a projection on the wall, because tablets, yes, are a staple for many families, and digital books can be overstimulating sometimes for little kids. And honestly, they leave little room for imagination. But Moonlight bridges the gap between traditional and digital books. There are playful projections, vivid sound effects, and read-along features make this multi-sensory story time a delight. Moonlight is here to help you create imagination-filled, interactive bedtimes for your whole family and make story time magical again. Use the code MOONLIGHT10 with our link to get an extra 10% off your purchase. It's very cool. So what makes you, we're gonna go on to what you're doing recently and how you moved into the industry. Well, let's do that first, because I don't want to jump ahead because I have so many questions and I cannot wait to hear it. So tell us what happened. You were teaching with your high school.
Yeah. So I was going every Friday, and the principal was like, hey, since you're leaving every Friday, you're going to need, like, you're going to take a 20% pay cut. I said, great. I don't care. Like, I'm going to go do this. And meanwhile, a buddy of mine who I went to high school with had also just finished his film degree. So he was actually taking over for me every Friday. So it was about April of that year, and it was our Easter break, so we were off. So I decided I wanted to go to MGM as much as I could just because I loved being there. So I was there, and one of the days, and this wouldn't have happened if I wouldn't have been there this day, but I'm sitting there reading the script, and an executive comes in. He's like, mother effer, I just got a ticket. And this was just when cell phones had been made illegal to talk on the phone or while you're driving. So yeah, so they were super on top of it. And a light bulb went off in my head. And I said, my dad is a cop. Not that he's going to fix this ticket, but you know, if I can show maybe some short sense of support, like it may mean something. So I tell my friend who got me the internship and he's like, you need to tell him right now. So I walk over there and I said, hey, my dad is a cop and like, he can't fix this for you, but maybe there's a way that he can help you navigate this a little bit. And he goes, are you serious? And I said, yeah. So a few hours later, he comes up to me, goes, hey, by the way, are you looking for a job right now? And I was like, yes. And he goes, okay, here's my buddy. He's a producer. You need to call him right now and see what you can do, basically. So I call him like immediately. And he goes, hey, I heard you are like the best intern that MGM's ever had. I've heard that if there's one kid to pick, it's you. He goes, and again, it was just like so mind blowing to hear these things. Right. And he goes, can you meet me today in Santa Monica at 4:30? I said, hey, I'm going to the Final Four in Atlanta at 6:30 out of Long Beach. Is there any way that we can reschedule this? is there any way that we can reschedule this? And he said, look, man, I'm going to New York for 2 weeks after this. I want you for this job. However, I can't promise you'll be here when you get back. So I call my dad and I'm like, dad, this is what's going on. And he goes, and I was like, what should I do? And he's like, son, you know what the answer is. And I was like, no, you weren't supposed to say that. You're supposed to say, go to the Final Four. So I was like, hey, I'll come meet you right now. So I get to Santa Monica. And he goes, okay, I know you need to get out of here. Basically, the job is yours. I just want to see if you're the real deal. I get it. He goes, the job's yours. Go ahead and go. So I... So I drive to Long Beach and I make it on time for my flight. On the way there, I call the
douchebag
school.
Douchebag like, and wonderful yeah, at the so same I call, time. I call the school, like, how do you?
I call the school and I said, "Hey, I'm not going to be coming in on Monday. However, I got someone lined up for you."
From Long
and
Beach?
They said, "No problem. Like, we get it." Shit. So they're like, "We know your heart's there. Go do that." And you know, you've set us up with somebody. Just finish off a week with us, or I forget exactly what it was, but something like that. And so, yeah, I hopped on a plane, got the job, made it to the Final Four. Yeah. Oh, it was a great weekend. It was a legendary weekend.
That's a great fucking weekend. Jesus, really? Right? You work for MGM, like.
So, I need a dad who works.
I know, so I need a police dad. Officer. My cousin's a police
There's
officer.
There's one last little part to this. So,
and his name is Patrick O'Sullivan. About, so it's like, into, I mean, stop it, right? No. Yeah, he's like perfect.
I did find my girlfriend at the time that weekend, mm-hmm. too. So it was like, it was a really good Yay. Weekend altogether.
You made out with a cheerleader.
about a month into that job, I had helped find some financing for his movies. And I had also put together some things and all this other stuff within the month that I was there. And because I helped him find the financing for the movie, he was like, hey, I'm going to go to New York to shoot this movie. You're out of a job, but it'll be yours when I come back. And I was like, okay, that's fine. He said, who can I introduce you to? And I said, look, I want to direct, and that's what I want to do. I don't care who it is. I don't care if I get paid or not. I will figure it out. Just can you link me up with somebody, please? So he introduced me to a director, a studio director. He had just played Sundance a couple of times and it was about to do his first studio film. And worked as an intern for him for a while. And then I started working, you know, sort of like an assistant-ish basis. And I worked with him for a few years after that. And it was amazing. And it was like a masterclass in film school because I not only got to see my first studio film, but I also got to be see a young filmmaker at work in the studio system. And that was worth I can't tell you how much, like, just seeing that firsthand was unbelievable.
Yeah. I think that's so cool too, because I remember when I first got out here too, I started auditioning for, somebody was like, don't audition for the small stuff or whatever. And then I was like, yeah, but I want to work. Like, I'm not doing this necessarily for the money right now. I know it has to be a career and I know I have to, and I wasn't even trying to build up my reel, but I met people who were early on in their mm-hmm. career and then they did bigger things and then they did bigger things. And it was like, I really like this vibe of these creatives and we have the same energy and so you build this team and you starting with somebody who was working. I mean, granted you came from MGM, but you found the real excitement in watching a director grow from a start-out director to going to Sundance and getting a studio. And that's
incredible. I think it's important for people to know that
the process.
And you're coming mm-hmm. out here and you're doing shows. It's so important to do those student films. And even if they're not getting paid, because it is, as if you haven't figured it out yet, it's all about who you know. It's all about the connections and the energy that you have, the positivity, the work ethic. And then that's why a lot of people will say that's the best film school.
Yeah.
It's just going in there and getting in the industry.
That's right.
That's totally it. And while I was working for the director, I was also directing my own stuff. So, you know, I was able to get the studio director's feedback on the stuff that I was doing. And it was like, wow, this is cool. Like, you know, not only am I getting to make stuff, but I also have this very high level director telling me whether this is good or not, you know? And it's like, man, this is amazing. Again, it doesn't hit you till later sometimes about what an incredible opportunity that was and how much it paid off in the long run.
So I have two questions for you. One is, what do you feel like you took away from film school that would make that be advice for someone else, whether it be in Michigan or Pennsylvania or LA? Like, what do you feel like? Do you feel like going to film school is a necessity as a filmmaker or a director, or do you feel like you just need to dive into the industry?
I think it just kind of depends on the path that you want to take. And I also think it kind of depends on the type of person that you are. For me, I tell people this all the time, especially people that are wondering if they should go to film school or not. Like, for me, I had to go to film school. Like, I had to be in a structured environment that showed me how to do these things, because that's how I operate. It's like, give me a goal, give me the structure in which I need to work, and then let me kind of run wild. And then that's what film school gave to me. On top of that, being at a school like Michigan, that's, you know, a lot of these people end up becoming executives at different companies. A lot of these people end up being like, there's not a lot of filmmakers that come out of there. It's a lot more executives, a lot more managers. It's much more business focused. So that was a huge benefit and has been a huge benefit still, because anytime I see someone, it's a Michigan alumni, I just go, hey, I know we don't know each other, but go blue. Like, you know, sometimes it connects and sometimes it doesn't. That's all well and good. But it's like, that network in and of itself has been amazing. On top of that, it made me see films in a like ones that I would never see if I didn't like have to go figure it out. It introduced me to stuff that I didn't know I loved, like the movies of Akira Kurosawa. Like, never in a million years would I have gone to pursue those movies, but seeing Seven Samurai and then going, what is this? Oh my God, I need to do something like this.
And then having some sort of like breakdown in the classroom where you're discussing exactly. that. And
yeah.
Yeah. And then, like a literal breakdown. Like,
that's still
those happen too.
Yeah. But being able to have those discussions and then knowing what to look for when you're watching other films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, did it do a lot for me on the production front? No. Like, that's something where once I left school, I just had to learn. Right. Like,
yeah.
And of course, the year after I leave, they opened the state of the art production facility. But it's like, you know, so for me, I just had to go out and figure out how to do it. Right. But
yeah,
again, it I think kind of just depends on the school that you're going to. And again, what you need from it. Yeah. Right. Because there's a million filmmakers out there that have done extremely well for themselves that didn't go to film school. So it's like,
well, and that's the thing is normally like even my nephew right now is in music and he's going to, and it's trying to figure out. I remember one of the stories, a friend of mine from high school was it was an actor in high school and he tested out of everything going to Syracuse to get into the theater program. So we never had to take any math or prerequisites or anything. He only had to take theater at Syracuse. And he is incredible. And he got out of Syracuse and he went to audition and he was like, look at my resume. And they were like, we don't give a shit.
Exactly.
Because you don't have you don't know what's happening in an audition and how to like conduct yourself or whatever it is, all those nuances. And so he's like, I had 4 years where I tested out and I thought I was leaving
prepared for work.
Right. And so I think that's sort of the thing is like, you are either the type of person that learns from initially, you're the, like you said, I personally am the type of person that I learn from being in the mix.
Yeah.
I cannot sit in a classroom and have people show me things and go and see the nuances. I need to be inside of it and feel it with my body and all that. Whereas you like the path that set out before you, and then you take it and you run with it.
That's exactly right. It's like, I love understanding the theory of something, but I don't really learn it until I put it into practice. And
yeah, I'm kind of like that too.
You know, so
yeah, that's like, super Brooke. Yeah.
So it's like, it's why I read so many books and then go, okay, but is this true or not? Let me go figure it out for myself. Right. So So that's how my brain works and that's how it operates. And again, it's like, if you're deciding to go to film school or not, it just has to feel whether it's the right thing for you or not. Because like, I've met a couple kids that are watching movies when they're 16, 17 years old. Like, I'm like, first of all, how'd you find out about these?
Right.
And then you're making way better movies than what I was doing like after I graduated. So I don't necessarily know what film school would do for you outside of the network. And like, unless you're going
to my biggest thing. I got kids that are, you know, my oldest is about to go to college and he's going for television and film. He wants to focus on editing, but same thing. I mean, that's what I tell him. Like, I know you could sit here and you've taught yourself everything on all of this, you know, and you're on top tier stuff, but it's your connections that I want him. And plus I just want him to be well-rounded. You know, I want him to come out and be able to pull things that he can create art for.
And that was the other thing for me that I really needed, like going to Michigan. It was such a big school. I love the academics. I love that it was a huge athletic school as well. And it was like, this is a go-to college experience in all the ways. And again, for me, I'm a collaborative guy. I love being around a lot of people. I love, like, I feed off people's energy. So again, even though I didn't connect with a lot of the film school students, just being in the environment or being in the energy, like, helped me to just feed the beast a little bit more. And on top of that, writing about movies and writing about them in different ways. Like, I was just telling someone the other day that my finals were like a 20-page paper on Rambo and like a 15-page paper on like 90s family films, you know? And I was like, and it just made me think about movies in a different way. So it's like, for me, that's how I needed to learn and that's how I needed to get it in order for it to really stick.
But then you went into music. So how did you transition from being
look at his face
and doing all of this to now you not only have worked with some big stars, most recently Nicki Minaj.
Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, can we say that?
Yeah, yeah, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. but you were in the, like, the, what were, tell us a little bit about how you worked your way into that and what you were doing.
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of hit this thing of like, what am I really supposed to be doing? I don't really know. I think I'm a fairly decent artist, but I also think my brain is very geared towards business. Funny enough, I couldn't pass business
school,
right?
Isn't that crazy? Full circle?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so, you gotta listen to your dad.
You got a producer hat and you have a creative hat. And I think having both of those is like, wow.
That's incredible. Yeah. Your left brain and right brain.
That's exactly, I mean, and that's the balance that I'm always, that's always in my head, right? Is like, yes, I love talking about the art. But I go, cool, how do we make money off this, right?
Because how do we pay for it?
Yeah, exactly. How do we pay for it? And not only that, but to me, art is not meant to just be, you know, a personal narcissistic kick. Like, it's something that's supposed to be shared. And how do you do that? Through audiences. So that's how I see them all, feed each other. So I was kind of at this point where I was like, you know, this directing thing is like, it's kind of working out. I've made some pretty good movies. I've gotten some pretty good fanfare for it. I progress reasonably well, but I don't know if I'm just all my friends kept telling me, dude, you're such a better producer. You're a great director, but you're even better producer. And I was like, but am I? And they're like, you brought like these global superstars to these short films. How you did that? Nobody knows, but you're able to do that. And that is a special gift. And yeah. So I kept struggling.
Because you're an Aries.
How did you do that?
So I kept struggling with this.
He's not going to deny it. It's true.
No, it is. But I kept struggling with this of like, well, am I an artist or am I a business person? But, you know, whatever. So then this is going to sound crazy, but it's true. I saw Marry Me, the Jennifer Lopez movie, and I was moved to tears by it. Not because it was a great movie, but because I was like, oh my God, I think I found what I want to do. And it was because of how well marketed the movie is, how well integrated it was on social media, like how everything started to connect. And it was like, it was a good movie. You know, it wasn't the best movie.
Yeah, it was cute.
It was good.
Yeah.
And I sat and I thought to myself, that's something I want to do. 2 months later, don't ask me how this happened, but a recruiter reached out to me and goes, hey, would you like to work for Jennifer Lopez's team? And I was like, sure.
What the fuck is going on, Tony?
Yeah, so
what's happening?
You know, so
tracking
that, he's doing our lowly little show and he's been with Nicki Minaj and Jennifer Lopez. I'm so sorry.
So, you know, it was a fascinating experience. It was fascinating being behind that. She was at the time putting together the last bits of her album. So I was working on the management team. So I've seen all the sort of, you know, pieces come together, both in film, music, and her branding stuff, all her products that she does. So I really was able to use like my entire brain at that point, which was great. And it felt really exhilarating. I left after a couple months. And from there, I was like, well, I just started looking up more jobs. And I saw this position for day-to-day manager in music. I go, I don't know what that is, but that sounds like something I can do. Again, I'm walking down the street, walking on the boardwalk, and I go, you know what would be kind of interesting? Would be being a day-to-day manager for Nicki Minaj. And I was like, because I go, I don't listen to her music. I don't like, she's kind of diametrically opposed because like, you know, it's the rap world versus like, kind of like, I guess the more poppy world, I guess you would call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, it would just be fun to be that in that environment. And again, I kid you not, a week later, I get a text saying, hey, would you be interested in being day-to-day manager for Nicki
Minaj? I need
to
hook arms with you and walk around with you all the time.
Can you just put things in the universe for us too?
I need you to rub your goodness. So, is that wrong to say? I'm so
not
sorry,
at all. Not at all.
I'm happily married.
So I
different kind of goodness, not weird goodness. Lovely goodness.
Totally.
It's fine.
So I interviewed for the job and I was probably the least qualified of everyone that they were talking to, but you know,
the woman that
hired me just said, you know, there are people with 10 years experience doing this job that should have this position, but you just get it. You understand it. You understand what needs to do. She goes, whatever you need to learn, I'll teach you. And I was like, holy crap, like, this is amazing. So I jumped right at the opportunity. And it was, I mean, it was an experience and a half, to say the least. And, you know, Nikki's an amazing person. She is so, like, she's a brilliant marketer. That's why she has her own class at Cal, like, about marketing. And it's like, truthfully, one of the smartest people I've ever been around. So it was like just soaking up all that on top of her being like listening to her rap and then hearing the end product and going, how the hell did you do that? Like, I'm getting chills just talking about it because the lyrics were so brilliant. And like, again, this is me not being a hip hop fan, listening to the music going, she is beyond gifted. And this is the first time actually listening to the music. And it is blowing my mind how good she is at this. So that really just pushed me to be like, okay, well, maybe there's something else here, you know, and like, maybe there's more to explore here. I don't know. So that's why I've been sort of like, well, maybe I might go back into music. Maybe I might go in that direction and, you know, starting to explore different opportunities there. So I'm, you know, right now at this sort of crossroads of like, well, kind of see what happens and kind of let it go as it may right now.
That's exactly,
I love that. Yeah. I think that's a reminder for a lot of people. Whenever you're looking at job site or, you know, things that say what this is what we're looking for. And a lot of times people will just not apply because they're like, well, I don't know how to do that. I can do that, but I don't.
I have the right energy for it. Like, this sounds like something.
You almost need to just do it, right? Like, just do it. And what's the worst that's going to happen? You're not going to get it.
And like, I mean, I will say like just speaking to Nikki directly and her saying to me like, hey, you understood it. Like, you got me and you understood what I needed.
Yeah.
And it was like,
when you listen and you're willing to learn. And that's the thing, is like every scenario that you find yourself into, which is really the umbrella of what you bring to the table, is I'm always willing to learn. I'm willing to listen. And to criticism, to ideas, to collaborative, to a brand new industry I've never even been into, someone's music I don't even know, that you are really, really taking it in and then using it to better that specific environment.
Yeah, and I mean,
and that you're always learning. Like, you're sitting here. Tell us a couple of the, like, look, we could go through some of the films that you've done. Like, some of the,
we'll list it all too on the,
I know, but you've done such an array of work, I guess is my point, that it just goes to show you your like
versatility,
hunger for learning different creative art forms, and you've not put yourself into a box.
Well, and I think too, like, I used to approach it too from wanting success so badly, like. And I think that also it drove.
What did that look like for you? What did that look? Because that's a struggle sometimes for people that are trying to figure out whether success looks like popularity or success looks like financial success. What does that mean to you, success?
It was for me
right now, because it can evolve.
Oh, now it's completely different. At the start, it was all about the money, the fame, the prototypical idea that you have of success, right? And it was crazy because then I got to the pinnacles of like the top of these places and I go, I don't feel any different. I feel the same. Nothing's changed. I still feel like the same person. I still have the same insecurities. So why am I so obsessed with this stuff? This makes zero sense to me. Why don't I just throw myself at the world with more genuine care, love, and compassion, as opposed to, you know, wanting more and not understanding for what. It was never going to fill some hole that was missing until I started taking care of myself, until I started focusing on myself, until I started repairing the things that needed to be fixed within me, that the definition of success completely changed for me. So it was having to go through those hard times, having to like lose a lot, you know, and by not losing career-wise, but personally, that really started to push me to change internally, that I really started to redefine success was. And again, it's why I also partly attribute why some of the opportunities have come to me the way that they have, is because I've really started to just be like, frankly, I don't care who you are at star level. I care about you as a human being and as a person, how I can help lift you up or take you to the next place that you want to go, whatever that looks like. I want to be there for that. And if that means something great for me, fantastic. But if not, that's okay too. I told you this is my job and this is what I'm here for. So yeah. And it's like, when I work with independent artists that are just starting out, or when I'm working with Nikki, like someone of Nikki's stature, they're getting the same energy from me. They're getting the same intensity from me. They're getting the same, like, I am here to be here and I'm here with you because I'm here with you right in this moment. And that's what matters to me right now. So, you know, I don't know where this diatribe is going necessarily, but
it's delightful.
But it's how I redefine success.
You were working with Nicki Minaj and now we're writing a musical, and that's is ridiculous to me because that experience, we started this before you were working with Nicki.
Yeah.
And so the fact that now that new experience for you can come into your writing work as you're writing this musical, that is incredible. You have this brand new valve that opened of music that came into your life that you didn't even have access to before emotionally necessarily.
Yeah.
And now it's like, now you have all these new things that can come in creatively.
Yeah. Let's just say he goes from directing and writing for television and film and moving on to even a novel, which you have circulating, to comics for, you know, the youth. What was that called? Revolutionary?
The Revolutionary Kids.
The Revolutionary Kids, which I think is just such a funny concept.
Yeah.
Give us a little like taste of what that is, because it's so funny.
Yeah, so it all started with a short film that I made a few years back called Viva la Revolución. And it's about a little kid who learns about the Cuban Revolution and he's bullied at school. So he decides to start a revolution against the bullies, right? So he puts on like the Che Guevara like outfit and all that stuff. And he starts, you know, and he starts a revolution against these, and he gets all the quote nerdy kids to rise up against the bullies, right? And in the end, he ends up becoming the bully. So it's like anyone can become the bully. And when I started taking it around to schools, it was really trying to empower kids to learn how to love themselves more so that they didn't feel the need to bully. And if they did encounter bully, how they can better navigate it. So it really took on this social emotional learning aspect to it. So, you know, as we were promoting it, again, wild that this happened, but it was kind of like,
you're like a little fucking lucky charm, bro.
It was kind of running out of steam. And my mentor and I were talking about like how we can, you know, extend the life of it. And he goes, well, have you ever thought about books? And I was like, oh, wow. I never even thought about that. Again, a couple days later in my inbox is a letter from a literary agent going, hey, have you ever thought about turning this project into a series of children's books? I was like, how?
Because you put it out there.
I know.
Because you put it into the universe with kindness and love.
But it just blew my mind that it happened. And then
I sound,
you know,
like you. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah, girl.
So it's then, all candly and crystally.
It's a place to be. It's a place to be, Brooke.
It is.
So, you know, they were like, okay, well, can you write this graphic novel? I was like, I've never written a graphic novel before, but I'll give it a shot. They're like, it's pretty much like a screenplay. So I said, okay, cool. So I did it, wrote it in 2 days. They're like, this is fantastic. Do more of them. And I said, great. So basically what the basic concept is each graphic novel takes a historical event and it takes a kid. So let's say a kid is going through their parents' divorce. She learns about the Cold War later in the day at class. And so when she steps onto the playground, it turns into 1950s Germany. And there's a wall and she's behind it, right? And, you know, they're going through the steps of the Cold War. They're learning how nations were used as proxies to fight, you know, the bigger nations. And as a girl is going through this, she's realizing, oh, her parents are doing that in the divorce. They're using her to, you know, fight against each other.
Out of here, Tony.
Jesus. So as she's going through this, you know, she's starting to understand, wait, I'm pushing all my friends away. I'm putting up this wall against the people that care about me the most. And what I need to do is tear down this wall. So that's where she learns, in order to, I know, I when I Listen. Saw the when I saw the artwork for it, I started tearing up. It was such a powerful piece. Like, and just, you know, teaching each novel teaches a kid something that they need to learn about some part of life that they're either experiencing or that they haven't experienced yet, whether it's going to a new school and it turns into Ellis Island or, you know, whatever it may be. It's like,
where do we find these books? Because you are fucking Judy Blume. I need my kids to find, are they available at all yet or not?
Not yet. They're actually up for sale to publishers right now.
Stop. So, oh my God.
Yeah. You have but to. But then this moved into like another novel. And then you had this idea too with, the concept with a musical, and you had just got come to see the producer. No, what led you to go, let me now write a musical?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I had gone to a screening of the producers, at AMC. It was like, you know, one of those, they have them once in a blue moon every Tuesday kind of thing. And I just so happened to see that it was on. And I went, and I was the only person in the theater, and I had seen the producers several times before, and I love it, right? But being a sole person in a theater, I just found myself like obnoxiously laughing the whole time. And I was like, God, I knew I liked this movie. I didn't know how much I loved it. And then, you know, Springtime for Hitler comes on and my mind just like exploded. And I was like, again, I've seen this 100 times, but it just started sitting differently with me. And I go, how in the hell Mel Brooks made this 15 years after World War II ends as a Jew, and he's making this thing? This is blowing my mind. So I thought to myself, that's when the connection of comedy and, like, you know, lowering metaphorical walls and helping people engage with each other really started to click with me.
Especially over serious topics, right?
Exactly. Yeah. For such a serious topic. Yeah. And I had been wanting to write the story about immigration for a while, and I was getting really, really bothered that so much content that was being made for the Latino audience or was being made by Latinos was like so depressing and so sad all the time. And I was like, please, for the love of God, can we do something else other than this? So that's when I, right after I got out of the producers, songs just started popping up in my head of like, you know, I would just start going, don't deport us, support us. And like, you know, that type of stuff would start going. And every now and again, I would, you know, be talking to a friend, and I would tell them, like, I would just sort of hum it, or I would say one or two things, and they would start busting up laughing. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I was talking to my mentor, and I started telling him about this. And I was like, and here you feel this emotion, and this is what you're supposed to do. And he goes, you understand what you're doing right now is you're describing a musical to me, right? And I go, I had never put two and two together, right? And then he introduced me to a composer who I was like, here's what I think it feels like. I wrote like a one-page treatment, and I was like, here's some songs that kind of come to mind, and here's like a couple ideas I had. And we sat in a room for like 3 hours, and you know, I would go, oh, this song, There's a Me in America, and he would just start playing it immediately.
And I was
like, oh my God, you got it. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And from there, they're just like, well, you need to write it. And I was like, but I don't know anything about writing musicals. They're like, doesn't matter. Just you need to write it and then figure it out from there. And I was like, okay. So that's how it happened.
And that's then you crazy. Found us.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give away all the secrets of the musical. Yeah. But
I do want to say, you keep mentioning a mentor. And I think that it's extremely important that those that are coming into the industry or that are in it, if you don't have someone or a mentor to kind of have your back or to push you or to like
just see those things. Yeah.
Yeah. To help you.
And you can't see from the outside.
That it's extremely important you find someone.
Yeah.
Someone, right, that has your back and that isn't just, because it's it can get lonely out here when you're creating. Absolutely. And you're just throwing things out there and hoping that people feel it, and to make sure you've got somebody to support you.
Yeah. Well, and I got to say too, like, he's become one of my closest friends as well. And like how he pushes me, not just like in a business sense. You know, when people ask me like, where'd you get your business acumen from? I was like, oh, he gave me my master's in business, basically. You know, because he's been a super successful entrepreneur, but he's also been an artist, you know. So it's like, it kind of, I don't know, again, it's kind of one of those things where kindred spirits just kind of met, and like, he understood how I saw the world, and he really just got me. And he saw something in me, you know, and, you know, him being in his 60s and me being in my 20s at the time, I was like, whatever this guy's got, I want to learn. And like,
but you saw it too. It wasn't just him that saw something in you. You saw it in him too.
Immediately.
That kindred spirit thing to follow through with it and not feel weird about asking for help or creating that relationship, because it's a two-way street. It isn't just somebody who's like, I'm going to take you under my wing.
Yeah.
It's you wanting to learn and seeking him out and creating that relationship with somebody that you just felt and knew in your heart it was supposed to be.
Well, and I will say too, like, he has told me, especially early on, he would tell me, I was like, why are you doing this for me? Like, I don't understand. Like, you've been so massively successful. You know, you're older in years. You can basically be traveling the world doing whatever you want. And like, yes, he does that. But also, he's there for me whenever
I need him. He takes your call.
Yeah. He's there for me whenever I need him, you know? And it's like, but he would tell me, he goes, it's because of how you approach things. It's because of the desire and the hunger that you have to learn that I want to be here and that I want to be here every step of the way, you know? So it's
and you know what else? I'm going to tell you what, is because you would do it too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's
because that's who you are to the monkey system of passing it down. And you're going to take somebody else with you as well. Like, well, there's going to be, yeah.
And I will say, just the way that he's taught me and the way that I've learned from him, just by honestly, by osmosis, just being around him, seeing the way that he treats people, seeing the way, you know, how deeply spiritual of a man he is, all this stuff, like, I've integrated into my life. And then I go, great, whatever I do, people should feel that same level of attention and energy that I feel from him, because it's like, if not more, like, there's a Tony version of it too that exists. So it's like, how do I do that for other people that come into my orbit or that I reach out to or whatever it may be?
It's so refreshing to hear you say that. It seems like we have a lot of industry folks on, and the thorough line and the takeaway, and I don't know if it's just because there are people we know, so we're like-minded in that way, but it just seems like you and others that we've had on, the whole thing of, you know, just being, you know, in tune with a human to human situations and looking at it from that standpoint. And like Mel was saying, the monkey system and how we, you know, we hook arms and, you know, help pull each other up. And I just think that that is so important and sometimes can be lost in the idea of what people in LA or people in the entertainment industry are.
But we also surround ourselves by people who
that's what I was going to say. Yeah, like, am I ruining? Because like we're like friends with all these people.
But we're lucky enough because we not push other people out, but we see people in certain situations. We're like, okay, I can see how you work and that's fine. And I'm going to learn something from you. But we all sort of start navigating ourselves towards other people who are like-minded and want to be in the industry in the same way.
Absolutely. And I think too, like, if you're not creating stuff together, then what are we really doing here? You know,
that's right.
Yeah.
Literally at the core essence of what I believe art to be is about human connection. It's about expressing yourself so other people can see themselves in that. So it's like, if you're not working with other people to do that, then again, what are we doing here? You know, and
art does not have to be lonely and should not be lonely.
Exactly. And I will say too, that like, I was so fortunate to experience people getting to where they wanted to be at a very early age and seeing them reach the quote pinnacle and being absolutely miserable. And it was because the way that they treat other people, it's the way that they stepped on other people. They couldn't see that for themselves. And yes, they achieved massive, unbelievable success, but simultaneously, it goes great. It's pretty lonely at the top because nobody wants to be there for you.
That's
yes,
right.
They'll show up for you because they want something for you. But where are they at on a Thursday night when, you know, someone broke up with you and there's no one to talk to? Where's that person? You know, so it's like, again,
so no one's there to help you pick you know, up.
And so I go, there's no reason that.
No, it's real.
There's no reason that we can't all succeed together. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, as long as you're a good person, I want to help you out. And it's like, even if you're not, I still want to try to figure out a way to help you out.
Even if you suck,
to a point. So.
Yeah, we get tormented too because we go to sleep and like going like, why? Yeah. They're better people than this. I know there isn't.
So. What?
Have you ever realized in a moment of boredom that you need to have a new furry comforter right now? Well, I have. And that's why I love and I'm so grateful for Wish.com. They have everything from kids' clothes and face masks to hair extensions and Jeep Wrangler accessories. They have vampire teeth, string lights, and plant seeds. I was skeptical at first, but when I found my much-needed outdoor shower bath tent and women's travel urinal, I was sold. Just make sure to look at the reviews with photos before you buy. Wish items may take no less than 48 days to arrive at you or your neighbor's door. Ugh, I love Wish.com. One of the things, my fear, is that too many noodles against the wall. And I worry about, I don't want people to, like, you see people with on their card, they have producer, actor, director, voiceover artist, psychiatrist, whatever it is. Like, since I first moved out here, I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah.
And so what is your solution to feeling like you're putting too many noodles against the wall? Is it that you do one thing at a time, or how do you navigate that as?
Yeah. So I guess for me, like, it'll vary from time to time, but sometimes, like, as soon as I finish Those Who Fear Us, the novel, I was like, great, musical now, like, time to do this. Right. But at the same time, like, have I become a victim of that stuff as well? Absolutely. Like, of having way too many things. Yes. Because for so long, a huge struggle of mine was people didn't know what to do with me. They would go, you're amazing. You're great. Don't know what to do with you though. Right. Like, you're not an assistant. You're not a sound recorder. You're not whatever the job may have been. It was like, but, you know, keep in contact. And it's like, okay, great. But can someone help me here? Right. And it wasn't until, like, it took a really creative mind, i.e., you know, Nikki's team or Jennifer's team, to be like, okay, well, this guy understands a lot. Let's try this and see if this sticks. Let's see if this works. So again, it's kind of like chicken before the egg, egg before the chicken kind of thing. Like, It's really hard.
The attitude. It all comes down to, like, your energy and attitude and your willingness to like, the people want to be around you. So it's almost like they're like, look, we don't know where this guy fits in.
We don't know where
you
fucking fit in.
His energy rocks. So you're coming.
But that's really what got me the job with Nikki, was like, he doesn't know a lick about music, but he's got the attitude for it and he's got the drive for it, you know? And it's like, oh, wow. I didn't know that was a skill set. But I guess it is, you know. So.
That was my manager. When I first met my manager in LA, when I first moved here, I hadn't had braces yet. I had short cropped hair with glasses, and I was going to play the quirky sidekick, and I knew what I was going to do. And I was in a workshop with her, and she said to me, first of all, you don't need the glasses to be quirky. You're quirky.
Yeah.
So let's stop being in costume every time you show up. And she only managed kids at the time. She had, like, really famous Hannah Montana kind of kids. And so I never looked at her as someone that was going to give me anything other than a friendship advice. And we were there for, like, kind of there for each other. And then she, like, 2 years later, I asked her to get me out of a management deal, 'cause I had this manager that was trying to take money from me, and I was like, what do I do? And she was like, Mel, I'm going to start taking adults. Will you please just come with me? And I was like, okay, great. And then since then, I moved to Panama, moved to Miami, moved to San Francisco. And I would call her and be like, Deborah Lynn, I'm moving out of the country. And she's like, yeah, go. And when you book something, or if I have something, like, whatever, just when you get back, whatever. And so there was always a sort of kinship with her.
Yeah.
Because we were like-minded, and she would always tell me, like, I don't know what the fuck to do with you.
Yeah.
Because you look like a racist, but you act like fucking cigarette mom.
Yeah.
And she's like, so I don't know where you fit in, but when we figure it out, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. You're like, I look like a what?
I look like a suburban mom in, you know, the Carolinas, but I act like, you know,
I think too, like, it really comes down to defining what it is that you want to be, and, like, the type of, like, artist or business person that you want to be, right?
Yeah,
and
that's it.
Before I used to be like, man, this is like a weakness because no one can figure out what to do with me, until I was just like, whoa, buddy, like, this is a strength. You're like a Swiss Army knife. It's put you in an industry and you'll figure it out, right? Like, because you want to be here. And it's like, well, maybe that's the type of person that I want to be, you know? And it's like, maybe that's the type of thing that I want to pursue. Now, it's not to say that people haven't had tremendous success going, well, I'm going to be a producer first, and that's what I'm going to do for 20 years. I made all my money. Great. There's less failure to this. Let me become a director now. So, or the other way around, or whatever it may be. So, you know, it's like, there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's a billion ways to be successful. There's a billion ways to do things. It's about your path and what it is that you want to do.
Yeah. And that's our clip for your episode.
Yay!
So thank you. All right, Tony Estrada, you're incredible. I am so happy that you are in our lives. And
yes,
if you, first of all, tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at official Tony Estrada, or you can go to my website, officialtonyestrada.com. It is official. And TikTok
is
official.
Well, it is super official. You are official. Yeah. Thank you for being with us. Have a good class.
Thank you, honey, so much.
Thank you for doing
it.
Thank
you.
All right.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Wow, you made it through the whole episode. We really appreciate that.
And you know what else we would really appreciate? If you went to Apple Podcast or wherever you listen and rate and review Moms Are Too.
It really helps us so much and lets other future listeners get an idea of what they're getting themselves into.
That's right. Moms Art 2 is produced by Rob Adler with Brooklyn Frequency. Music by Kai Sample.